Hello and welcome to the Illinois Audio Reader. My name is Cedric Richardson, and in this first of two segments, I'll be bringing you the Decatur Herald and Review. Thank you for joining me. Decatur Public Schools plan to in-person learning. The plan to return to in-person learning has been postponed until February the 8th due to a lack of an adequate number of bus drivers. Superintendent Paul Frigo sent out an announcement on Tuesday afternoon. At this time, our transportation provider, Alltown Bus Service, is unable to provide the minimum number of bus drivers required to safely transport students to and from school, Frigo said. Because of this, we have made the determination that we cannot safely bring students back in person starting January 19th. Therefore, we will postpone the in-person return to February the 8th while we continue to look for solutions. He added that the district knows this could create a hardship for parents due to the late timing of the notice. Attempts to reach the bus company on Tuesday were unsuccessful. Mary Williams has two kids in school, Chloe in eighth grade and Scott, a freshman. She told both youngsters as soon as she heard the news. They had been excited about going back and seeing their friends again, she said. All kids have missed opportunities and experiences that they should have gotten through going to school, she said. Some kids will move to new schools without ever seeing their old friends again. It's just sad. The district's plan had been to bring students back one day a week commencing on January 19th, with students who had elected the in-person option divided into two groups, one attending on Tuesdays and the other on Thursdays. The rest of the students would continue to learn remotely, and that plan had also tentatively been set to February 8th as the date when students would return to in-person up to 4 days a week, with the remote learning option still available for families who preferred to keep children learning at home. Please know that we are working to make the best decisions we can with the information we have, while always keeping health and safety at the forefront of those decisions, said Frigo. We will continue to monitor the metrics and will keep you informed leading up to the February 8th return. Thank you for your understanding as we continue to work through these unprecedented times. In other school news, the Decatur School Board on Tuesday voted to dispense with emergency days for the next 3 years, using remote learning instead of closing school. The Illinois State Board of Education provided the option for school districts and required a public hearing prior to the decision. The board held that meeting before the regular meeting on Tuesday to allow the community to speak on the topic if they chose. No one spoke or offered comment in person. Board member Geth Creighton made the point that though people tend to call those emergency days snow days, the district calls off for heat more often than snow, though that may not be necessary once all schools have air conditioning. Her concern with switching to remote learning on those days, she said, is that students wouldn't have their iPads at home with them if an emergency day was called last minute. Superintendent Paul Frigo said the solution had already been considered. Have students take their devices home every night just in case. Board member Andrew Taylor asked about the mobile hotspots that have been provided to families without Wi-Fi access. Can that be maintained? Taylor asked. Are they going to keep them indefinitely? None of that has yet been decided. Frigo said the district has a plan for learning packets to be kept at home in case of an emergency day so students could use those to learn at home. Taylor said he was not convinced the days should not be made up at the end of the school year and voted against the measure. The board also had extensive discussion on the postponement of returning to school in person. Students were set to return on January 19th, but that has been delayed until February the 8th because not enough drivers were available to run the bus routes. Board member Regan Lewis brought up the point that Alltown Bus Service is not fulfilling its contractual obligation to provide bus service, and Henry Walker, director of operations, said the company had told him that bus drivers were reluctant to return to work only 2 days a week and lose their unemployment benefits. Alltown has requested several times that the district continue to pay the company for service during remote learning. In the spring, the Illinois State Board of Education had encouraged districts to keep paying vendors even when schools are closed, but that expired, and Todd Cavalt, the chief operational officer, said the General Assembly has yet to appropriate funds for transportation reimbursement. Board member Kendall Briscoe said he wanted to know why the district did not have more notice from Alltown that were not enough drivers available since the return to learn plan was unveiled on December the 4th. We've had plenty of time during that time frame. Why weren't we in conversation with them at that time to say, hey, we've got to make sure these buses are ready to go? Cavalt said that Walker had been in regular contact with Alltown and they had indicated they had enough drivers until Monday. In other business, Holly Kitson was named principal of Parsons School, which will combine with Stevenson in August at the Parsons Building. The communities that have been meeting to consider whether to change the names of buildings that will be the sites of combined schools will give their recommendations at the January 26 meeting. Police are investigating a Monday night shooting that left a 42-year-old Decatur man with life-threatening injuries. Decatur Police Sergeant Chris Copeland said officers were called at 11:46 p.m. to a report of a shooting at the gas depot at 3603 East William Street Road. Copeland said police arrived to find a customer suffering from multiple gunshot wounds inside the business. The victim was taken to a local hospital with life-threatening injuries. Copeland said it does not appear to be a random act. Anyone with information about this incident is encouraged to contact the Decatur Police Department Detective Bureau at 217-424-4734 or Crime Stoppers at 217-423-TIPS if you wish to remain anonymous. An objection has been filed seeking to have an advisory referendum supporting the sale of recreational cannabis in Decatur removed from the April 6 ballot. The objection was filed Friday by Gerald Stocks, a registered voter in the city. In his objection, filed with the Decatur City Clerk's Office, Stocks cited four defects in the petitions. Stocks said an insufficient number of voters signed the petition to qualify for ballot placement, that the purported number of signatures must be reduced for invalidity of particularized defects, inconsistent headings on the petitions, and that some of the signatures were obtained outside of the mandated time frame. The Municipal Officers Electoral Board is scheduled to meet at 11 a.m. Thursday in the Decatur Civic Center Theater to consider the objection. The hearing is open to the public. The ballot question reads as follows. Should the city of Decatur allow the sale of recreational cannabis and cannabis-infused products to adults 21 and older? The decision to have the sales will still be left to the Decatur City Council. The council in October voted against allowing recreational cannabis sales in the community. Council members at the time raised concerns about the impact on young people and other issues. Illinois in 2020 became the 11th state to allow recreational marijuana usage. The legislation allows local communities to opt out of sales. City Clerk Kim Althoff said the ballot question was filed by an attorney, Sam Kamen, on behalf of Lisa Kendall. We feel that by filing now, we are keeping the topic at the top of people's minds, Kendall said when contacted after the petitions were filed. It confirms to the incumbent councilors that the will of the people of Greater Decatur is pro-cannabis. This could open up all sorts of unforeseen doors. There is also a push in the community to change to an aldermanic system of government here, as that's a more representative form of local governance. These upcoming city council elections could have incredibly far-reaching impacts, and having the cannabis referendum on the ballot gives those candidates in support of it an immediate measure of community support for one of the subjects that many of them are campaigning upon. There are currently 13 candidates seeking 3 available seats on the council in the April election. As a result, there will be a primary on February 23rd to reduce that list to 6. The candidates are incumbents David Horn and Chuck Kuhl, and challengers Anthony S. Chappell, Adolphus Cooper, Ed Culp, Elijah England, Mark Girdler, Jacob Jenkins, John Phillips, Hardik Shaw, Eric Summerlott, Marty Watkins, and William Wetzel. 80 recreational cannabis dispensaries have opened up in Illinois in 2020, and 30 more are planned. The industry was on track to have sales of $1 billion for the year. Taxes from cannabis sales are divided among state and local governments. United States Representative Rodney Davis is among Republican lawmakers who objected to new metal detectors outside the House chamber that were added as a security precaution following last week's deadly attack on the Capitol. The new safety protocol announced Tuesday from the acting sergeant-at-arms comes less than a week after a mob loyal to President Donald Trump stormed the White House. 5 people died. The Pool report quoted Davis's telling U.S. Capitol Police officers, "This is bull expletive." Speaking to Punch Bowl News, he called the measure political correctness run amok. "The threat is outside, not inside," he said. "Every resource used inside is one that can't be used outside." The Pantograph has reached out to Davis's office for comment. He was not the only lawmaker upset about the change. Several simply walked around the devices. Texas Representative Louis Gohmert said, "You can't stop me. I'm on my way to a vote." Freshman Representative Lauren Boebert of Colorado, who has announced her intention to carry a gun on Capitol grounds, set off a metal detector. It wasn't clear she had a cell phone or other metal object in her purse. She refused to allow a search of her bag and eventually was let into the House chamber. Louisiana Rep. Steve Scalise, the number 2 House Republican, said the metal detectors were designed to impede lawmakers from voting and were not discussed with GOP leaders ahead of time. Scalise told CNN that the situation is untenable because it impedes the ability of members to come and vote. "This is our job." Before Tuesday, members of Congress had almost free roam with the Capitol, able to bypass security screening stations at most entrances to the building. At the House chamber, there have been Capitol Police officers and civilian door monitors, but no screening stations. The acting sergeant-at-arms, Timothy P. Blodgett, wrote to House staff, "Effective immediately, all persons, including members, are required to undergo security screening when entering the House chamber. Blodgett also told lawmakers that they must wear masks during the COVID-19 crisis and that they face removal from the chamber if they fail to do so. And now the obituaries for today. Charlotte Ruth Lawler, 82, of Decatur, passed away on Saturday, January 9th, 2021, at Decatur Memorial Hospital. A graveside service to celebrate Charlotte's life will be held Thursday, January 14th, 2021, at Macon County Memorial Park. A private family viewing will be held 1 hour before at Tanzius Logan Funeral Service and Care. Memorials in Charlotte's honor may be made to Trinity Lutheran Church at 1960 East Johns Avenue in Decatur, Illinois, 62521. The family welcomes those interested to leave a message in the family guest book at www.tanziusloganmemorialpages.com. Phyllis Ann Meyer, 80, formerly of Dalton City, Illinois, passed away at 10 o'clock p.m. Sunday, January 10th, 2021, at the Walnut Creek Senior Living Campus in Kettering, Ohio. A private family funeral service will be held at Dawson and Wicca Funeral Home in Mount Zion, Illinois. The burial will be in LaPlace Cemetery. Memorials may be made to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Condolence messages may be sent to the family at www.dawsonwickoff.com. And finally, Clay Allen Alec Richard, the sweetest little boy, was born May 31st, 2018 in Lincoln, Illinois, to Keegan and Destiny Richard. Clay died on January 10th, 2021. The visitation for Clay will be held Friday, January 15th, 2021, from 5 o'clock p.m. to 7 o'clock p.m. at Full Gospel Evangelistic Center, located at 304 North McLean Street, in Lincoln, Illinois, 62656, the family will be having a private funeral ceremony. CDC and IDPH guidelines will be followed. Social distancing and masks are required. In lieu of flowers, please send donations to Keegan and Destiny Richard at 1318 Rutledge Drive in Lincoln, Illinois, 62656, or go to the GoFundMe at GoFundMe/7A748255. We will be dividing up donations between foundations that have helped us out through Clay's journey. Thank you for... That is actually all of the obituaries for today. It was bound to happen. After several fast food chains revamped their fried chicken sandwiches over the past year in hopes of standing out in the outgoing fried chicken sandwich wars, KFC is finally getting into the game. And as your humble fried chicken sandwich correspondent, who once ranked 26 of the fast food options, I obviously had to investigate. Though I'm also going to urge you to take a look at this post of my favorite local fried chicken sandwiches, since they are tastier. Of course, KFC already had a few fried chicken sandwiches on its menu, but as I found a few years ago, they didn't seem particularly well-loved. Its main offering, the crispy kernel sandwich, was weirdly small and not particularly exciting. The new sandwich, simply called the KFC Chicken Sandwich, or $3.99, features a much bigger piece of all-wheat meat white chicken that is double breaded and fried. It's served on a brioche bun with thick pickles and either regular or spicy mayonnaise. If that sounds awfully similar to Popeye's own wildly popular offering, you're definitely not wrong. But thanks to the chain's unique spice blend, which we may have uncovered a few years ago, this offering manages to stand apart from the crowd. The crust on the chicken is genuinely crispy, adding a great textural counterpart to the soft bun. There's nothing wrong with the regular mayonnaise, but the spicy version adds some much-needed heat to each bite. Unlike the new offering from Wendy's, which wasn't that different from its previous version, this one is a serious step up in quality for KFC. I'd probably rank it just after Popeye's and before Chick-fil-A. Nicely done, KFC. After testing the sandwich in Orlando, KFC is now offering the sandwich in select markets, including here in Decatur, before a full rollout later in February. Members of an Illinois National Guard unit based in Bloomington are among about 200 guardsmen being activated by Governor J.B. Pritzker to help with safety and security during next week's inauguration of Joe Biden as the next President of the United States. The 404th Maneuver Enhancement Brigade's 33rd Military Police Battalion, based in Bloomington, will provide about 100 military police soldiers for the inauguration. In addition to Bloomington, the battalion has subordinate units in Springfield, Freeport, and Fort Sheridan. A small medical team also is being activated to support the military police. The storming of the U.S. Capitol last week has brought concerns about the possibility of similar actions during the inauguration. In the wake of the recent incident at the Capitol, ensuring a peaceful transfer of power to the Biden administration is of the utmost importance, Pritzker said in a statement. The Illinois National Guard is renowned for its exemplary soldiers and airmen, and I'm proud to have them represent Illinois alongside with other service members during the upcoming presidential inauguration. Approximately 130 Illinois National Guardsmen were activated for President Donald Trump's inauguration in 2017, said Illinois National Guard spokeswoman Barbara Wilson. About 45 Security Forces airmen for the 183rd Wing, based in Springfield, the 126th Air Refueling Wing, based in Scott Air Force Base, and the 182nd Airlift Wing, based in Peoria, also will be activated to support Biden's inauguration. They will be joined by 30 airmen from the Illinois Air National Guard, who will provide communication, logistics, and religious support, as well as about 10 soldiers from the Bartonville-based 5th Civil Support Team, who will help the District of Columbia National Guard's 33rd Civil Support Team. Pritzker has also increased security about the Illinois State House after the FBI warned that state capitol buildings and Washington could be targeted around Biden's swearing-in. Republican leadership offered harsh criticisms for their Democratic counterparts on Tuesday as the Illinois General Assembly neared the end of its lame duck session. In a virtual news conference on Tuesday, House Minority Leader Jim Durkin of Western Springs and Senate Republican Leader Designate Dan McConchie of Hawthorne Woods accused embattled House Speaker Michael Madigan of pushing legislation through without sufficient input during the shortened session. Debate of an economic equity bill backed by the Illinois Legislative Black Caucus was cut off after about 45 minutes Monday night, and several major pieces of legislation, including a sweeping criminal justice overhaul, were expected to be heard well into the night on Tuesday. Durkin also criticized House Democratic leadership for imposing strict rules on public access to the Bank of Springfield Center, where the Illinois House of Representatives has been conducting legislative session since Friday. Currently, no members of the public are allowed to view House or Senate proceedings in person, and a limited number of media are allowed into the chambers to cover legislative action at any given time. It is very unfortunate that the lack of accessibility, and not just the media, but also the general public, is taking place, and it goes against our democracy, said Durkin. Witnesses at public committee hearings are also limited and have been giving testimony remotely in the House. While the changes are in place to prevent the spread of COVID-19, Durkin suggested House leadership has other reasons for the strict rules. It's because the majority party is fractured and wants to keep things under the rug as possible. Durkin's comments came as House Democrats struggle to rally around a single candidate for Speaker of the next General Assembly, which begins on Wednesday. Madigan, who has been Speaker for all but 2 years since 1983, suspended but did not withdraw his candidacy on Monday, while Emmanuel Chris Welch of Hillside declared he would also be seeking the Speaker's gavel. Welch joined Democrats Ann Williams of Chicago and Stephanie Coiffet of Oswego as the declared candidates in the race, although reports surfaced that Coiffet had dropped out of the race on Tuesday. A representative needs 60 votes in order to be named Speaker, a level of support no candidate appeared to have on Tuesday, although private wrangling of support was ongoing. There are 73 Democrats and 45 Republicans that will be seated in the next General Assembly. Durkin put to rest the rumors that a Democrat may receive Republican support in a bid to unseat Madigan, noting he expects to receive all 45 GOP votes for Speaker. An official vote is scheduled to take place when the new General Assembly is sworn in on Wednesday. Durkin said that although Madigan's next term is uncertain, he accused the Speaker of exercising his power to steer legislation before the end of the lame duck session. What we're experiencing in the House is that Democrats are willing to do anything because Madigan is willing to do anything for them, Durkin said, and if that means remaining in power or handpicking his successor, that's more important to him than the fiscal and ethical integrity of the state. Durkin said a Black caucus-backed bill affecting the state's procurement code was an example of Democratic Party leadership passing items through without sufficient input. He said the bill, which creates additional diversity requirements for state contracts, has broad implications on the cost of governance, but Democrats bypassed a Republican request for research on the fiscal impacts. Durkin also criticized the Democrats' rush to pass the bill language before new lawmakers are seated and when several current lawmakers will no longer be answerable to voters. These bills have been around in some format for a while, but the fact is that they were all amended in the past 24 hours without any input from Republicans, our staff, or anybody who's going to be affected by them, said Durkin. We don't want us to know. They don't want the public to know of what the cost will be upon the state of Illinois. McConchie echoed Durkin's calls for a more deliberative approach to legislation. We're not doing this in a manner that actually allows for substantive, full debate that a democracy really deserves. These life-changing decisions about the future of our state should not be made at the 11th hour without robust public support. Durkin also criticized Welch as Madigan's hand-picked successor, although Madigan's spokesman said he would not be making an endorsement in the race. Welch chaired the Special Investigative Committee, which looked into Madigan's alleged involvement in a bribery scheme with utility giant Commonwealth Edison. The committee disbanded in mid-December after meeting just 3 times in 4 months. Madigan has not been charged with wrongdoing and denies guilt. Thank you for joining me here on the Illinois Audio Reader. My name is Cedric Richardson. Goodbye.